You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items of Read on Air's LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hello, I'm Michael Piotrasz. Welcome to another recording of articles from Popular Science Magazine, a presentation of Airs LA. This week's articles include, at 1 minute, five new mules set to patrol Olympic National Park. At 4 minutes, Neanderthal dentists treated cavities 59,000 years ago. And finally, at 9 minutes, 44 seconds, almost half of everything orbiting Earth is space junk. Let's get to it. This first article is from the Environment Animals section and is entitled, Five New Mules Set to Patrol Olympic National Park, written by Laura Baeses, published May 12, 2026. Merle, Cuddy, Pip, Checkers, and Gopher will monitor trails, haul supplies, and help with search and rescue efforts. This article begins with a photo. A woman leads out a team of five mules. Its caption reads, "Mules have been helping maintain various national parks for over 100 years. Five new mules at Olympic National Park in Washington State are ready for the busy tourist season. Merle, Cuddy, Pip, Checkers, and Gopher join the park's large working mule herd. Mules have helped maintain the trails in national parks since the early 1900s, and they continue to help monitor Olympic's 1 million acres, 600 miles of trails, and 64 trailheads. Merle, Cuddy, Pip, Checkers, and Gopher were named by the park staff and are a nod to the different native plants and animals found at the national park. The mules help trail crews in some wild areas of the park. There is an additional photo, a mule team. Its caption reads, "Olympic National Park's mule herd works from April through October and then spends the winter in a large pasture." Mules are the result of interbreeding between a male donkey, Equus asinus, and a female horse, Equus caballus. Thanks to their strength, agility, and endurance, they are the perfect pack animal, according to Washington's National Park Fund. The park's over 24 mules each weigh about 1,000 pounds and can haul roughly 20% of their body weight. They carry everything from trail maintenance gear to construction materials and research equipment during their working season, April through October. They will even support the park's search and rescue teams, safely evacuating any injured hikers out of the wilderness. When a new mule arrives at the park, they spend time next to older and more experienced mules to learn the ropes. They are housed in a corral in the Elwha River Valley during their working season and head out to their winter pasture in Squim for a 5-month break. To help introduce the mule team to the greater public, Olympic National Park featured a Mule of the Month last year. Previous winners included a spirited, quick sports model mule named Rain Cloud and Daisy, who is dubbed a magnificent matriarch. This next article is from the Science Archaeology section and is entitled, "Neanderthal Dentists Treated Cavities 59,000 Years Ago," written by Margarita Bassi, published May 13, 2026. A molar points to some sophisticated dental work performed by our extinct cousins. This article begins with a photo, five different views of a Neanderthal tooth with a cavity that was filled. Its caption reads, "The molar tooth found in Chagraskaya Cave and its macro features." Neanderthals, Homo neanderthalensis, were once considered to have been extremely primitive and unsophisticated compared to us humans, Homo sapiens. However, continued research into our long-lost cousins has revealed that these extinct hominids were not quite as archaic as they seemed to early anthropologists. while archaeologists have found that Neanderthals pulled out food from their teeth with toothpicks and may have even used medicinal plants as antibiotics, researchers still aren't sure about the extent of their medical care abilities. Now, new research published in the journal PLOS-1 indicates that they were capable of complex dental interventions, which adds a series of cognitive and physical updates to the Neanderthal story. A team digging in Chagraskaya Cave in southern Russia's Altai region found a single Neanderthal molar that is approximately 59,000 years old. The tooth features toothpick grooves along its sides and a deep hole in its center that reaches into the pulp cavity. Tooth pulp is the jelly-like material that holds blood vessels, nerves, and connective tissue. Using three modern human teeth, the team showed that it's possible to make a hole of the same shape and same patterns of microscopic grooves by drilling with a stone point similar to tools that were previously discovered in Chagraskaya Cave. Andrei Krivoshavkin, co-author of the study and a researcher at the Institute of Archaeology and Ethnography at the Siberian branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences, tells Popular Science that the team eliminated all other interpretations. For example, quote, "natural wear from chewing could expose a pulp chamber over time, but it would not widen the chamber or create a deep, irregular concavity with smooth, rounded edges. Dental trauma, such as a fracture, would leave sharp, irregular margins and crackings, not the polished, rounded contours we see," unquote, he explains. They also ruled out taphonomic, geological, and chemical processes. Quote, "so while we always remain open to new interpretations, the evidence overwhelmingly supports deliberate human intervention," unquote, he says. Krivoshapkin and his colleagues also identified antemortem, before death, wear on the concavity walls and edges, showing that after the hole was made, the tooth continued to be used. In other words, the Neanderthal continued to chew and process materials with his tooth. According to Krivoshapkin, if the drilling had happened after the individual had died, the edges of the hole would be sharp and fresh and not polished in the slightest. Quote, "so the wear proves two things. First, the procedure was performed on a living person, and second, the intervention was successful enough that the tooth continued to function. That is what makes this a medical treatment rather than just a curious modification," unquote, he explains. The team also found changes in dentine mineralization in the tooth that aligns with serious cavities. Ultimately, Krivoshapkin and his colleagues argue that the hole in the tooth represents a Neanderthal dental operation that dug out the infection. And, yes, it would have been painful. They didn't have laughing gas 59,000 years ago. But as with dental surgery today, getting rid of the damaged part of the tooth lessens the pain from the infection. This intervention carries a whole set of implications about Neanderthal cognitive abilities. The tooth suggests that Neanderthals potentially could identify the source of pain, decide how to treat it, use the necessary manual dexterity to execute the operation, and withstand the intervention's pain to diminish future pain. It represents the first time such behavior has been shown in non-Homo sapiens, and it predates the earliest known human example by over 40,000 years. This abstract causal reasoning in Neanderthals, quote, "goes far beyond the instinctive self-medication seen in other primates," unquote, Krivoshapkin explains. Quote, "along with other recent discoveries, this finding challenges the old stereotype of Neanderthals as cognitively inferior to us, showing that they were not failed humans, but successful, innovative people in their own right. And on a deeply human level, it reminds us that the impulse to treat disease and relieve suffering is not uniquely modern. It is ancient and part of our shared hominin heritage," unquote. This final article is from the Science Space section and is entitled, "Almost Half of Everything Orbiting Earth is Space Junk," written by Andrew Paul, published May 12, 2026. abandoned rocket parts, dead satellites, and more circle the planet. This article begins with a photo, an illustration showing clouds of space junk orbiting Earth. Its caption reads, "There are very few projects and companies currently aimed at tackling the issue." Nearly half of all known objects currently orbiting Earth technically classify as space junk, but the true amount may be even higher. Not only that, the debris continues amassing faster than it's being removed. The latest Red Alert report comes from the engineering components company ACU and is based on information compiled from the U.S. Space Surveillance Network and its SpaceTrack database. According to their assessment, there are at least 12,550 tracked orbital debris fragments circling the planet, quote, "with no control or purpose," unquote. That's around 47% of the 33,269 known objects, which includes almost 17,690 satellites. But with many of those satellites now inactive, along with nearly 2,400 jettisoned rocket bodies, the total space junk is likely worse than the current numbers suggest. Countries are racing to establish a long-term human presence in space and on the moon, but there are a lot of little problems to consider. More specifically, these issues range from the size of screws and paint chips to dead satellites. All that space junk orbits the planet at roughly 17,400 miles per hour, meaning even a tiny collision could derail an entire mission. In 2016, for example, debris no bigger than a few thousandths of a millimeter smacked into one of the International Space Station's quadruple-glazed cupola windows and left behind a quarter-inch-wide crater. Crunching the numbers further, ACU calculated that there are 7 debris objects for every 10 satellites orbiting Earth. The responsibility almost entirely falls on 3 contributors. China has generated 34% of the junk, while the United States and the Russian-aligned Commonwealth of Independent States, CIS, have both provided about 31% of the debris. Most abandoned objects revolving around Earth follow a decaying orbit due to the planet's gravity and will burn up during atmospheric reentry. But that often takes years to occur, and as ACU points out, it doesn't always erase the issue. Material like aluminum, copper, and lithium may vaporize before they hit the ground, but their particulates remain in the upper atmosphere. More research is needed to understand the full impact, but evidence already suggests harmful effects on the ozone. So what's being done to address the issue? Not much, unfortunately. ACU notes that there are no major projects in development to remove space junk, although there is growing investments in at least maintaining or reducing the overall problem. The European Space Agency, ESA, is leading the charge with programs like ClearSpace 1, the first active debris collection mission. Meanwhile, a number of private companies are also beginning to implement their own endeavors. Technology like robotic arms, drag sails, and even harpoons are all being researched as potential ways to help address the problem. The bottom line is that roughly 15,550 tons of space junk currently above everyone's heads is literally not going anywhere anytime soon. That's about the same weight as 40 jumbo jets, and it's only increasing. ACU's report isn't meant to offer concrete solutions, so much as highlight that it's a very real problem that requires international coordination and efforts to control. Without that, humanity is going to have a much more difficult time exploring the cosmos. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's material from Popular Science Magazine. I'm Michael Piotrasch. And I'll be back soon with more interesting articles. Thank you for listening.